Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you, and now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about being our best leadership selves. Yes, and how to encourage other people to be their best selves. Because, well, that's important. You want to be the very best you can be, right? Right, of course you do. So what is your best leadership self? Oh, I know some of you are answering already. Yes, we always start out with a kind of a general question because this is not a scripted show. It goes where we take it. So as leader, what kind of best self do you have to bring? What's the areas where we have to really concentrate on being our best selves, right? Yes. I think the number one place where we need to be our best selves is when we need to think about empathy. I think that's the thing that most people are talking about, empathy, which we will remember and we're going to talk about, is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about our best self with some patience, right? We have to have some patience. Sometimes it takes a little while. Sometimes our participants are not exactly what we had in mind, right? Let's have some patience. Mm-hmm. Oh, our best self to reach out to the community. Yes, to reach out to others, to really think about them and to reach out and to say, you know, this is what we need to do. This is what we need to have. Our best self reaching out to our community. And to maybe outsiders, right? Right. Mm-hmm. This is true, and they're part of our community, but they're a special part. How about reaching out to our invisible participants, right? Yes, the people we call our invisible participants. The ones that, well, we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As leaders, our best self models civility and enthusiasm, don't we? Yes, we model both civility and enthusiasm as our best selves, right? Right. Mm-hmm. How about thinking outside the box? A lot of folk are talking about that. That would be our best selves, to think outside the box, to really say, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to think about things. Think outside the box. Mm-hmm. Hang on a second. I got to get rid of this box on my computer. Oh, hello, and how are you? Our best leadership self probably reaches out to experts too, right? Yes, we have to think about experts and when we need to call them in. And reach out to the media, of course, also. Because the media plays a very big role in everything nowadays. Since there's lots of media, isn't there? Yes. Mm-hmm. Let's also talk about our participants and their best selves, right? How can we get them to pull out their best self? How about encouragement? Good point, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they need to have sincere efforts, don't they? They need to be really serious about this. Mm-hmm. Okay. A lot of folks are talking about the employer and the employer control and whether or not that will cause the participants to, well, participate. Mm-hmm. And don't forget that sometimes we have the same goal but different reasons for wanting that goal. And that does make a difference. It makes a difference in cooperation level, and sometimes people have to have that explained to them, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's get started. Now, this time, let's talk about leadership and empathy first. Remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Hang on, everybody. Hang on 1 second. I'm going to go figure out what's happening with the computer here. Hang on. Hello, I'm back. Yes, we've got this straightened out. Sometimes the computer does little strange things. And it's kind of like, will you go look at this and find out what that means? And he's like, no, it's all right. Good. So let's talk about empathy. Remember that, and that is bringing out your best self, because sometimes you really don't want to. You don't want to have empathy. You want them to just get along and play nice. But we're going to have some empathy, because that doesn't always happen. So we're going to need, remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. So let's, how are we going to get that understanding? Thank you. A whole bunch of people are talking about the 5W questions because you've been listening. Thank you so much. Yes, we're going to break out the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. The 5W questions, right? Because we want to get a deeper understanding of how come somebody has that position. How come they're arguing that? Pardon me. How come they think that's a good thing, right? Yeah, because it seems kind of, well, maybe unreasonable. At least different. We'll give it a different, right? And we want to know why. Mm-hmm. You need empathy with lots of folk, right? Understanding. You ask all the questions in that order. Who, what, where, when, and why? Well, not necessarily, right? Do you ask all the questions within the same, in front of everyone? Not necessarily. You're the leader. You have to make that as a leadership decision, right? Yeah. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who told you that? What did they say? Where did you hear it? When did they say it? And why did you come to that conclusion? That might be something that you ask, well, in private, right? Or in a small team. Or you have to make a leadership decision about that. But you want to know the answer. And the other people in the group need to know the answer too, is the key to this. It's not done in a vacuum. We all need to have some understanding so that we can get along with each other sufficiently to be able to work together. That's the goal, isn't it? Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you really need to find that out, and you need empathy with a lot of folk, right? Yes, thank you. Mohammed says you need to create empathy within your group to create a team so that you can have success. So true. You need to create empathy within your group so that you can have a team and create success. Yes, if we're unwilling to work together, well, how on earth are we going to make a team and get success? We're not. Yes. So you have to have your participants need to create a team which creates your group dynamic. Mm-hmm. Yes, let's talk about our invisible participants here because we are actually going to think about them as outreach. But sometimes you have invisible participants. That's what Recipe for Peace Now calls them, really. And yes, and you need empathy and understanding because sometimes people are influencing what is happening within the group, within your participant reactions, right? Your participants are, well, kind of reporting to them, even if it's informal, but they value their opinion greatly, right? And they are having impact. And sometimes these invisible participants would like to have a direct impact, but they don't want anybody to know. And you must respect a request to be anonymous. Very, very important. If somebody wants to remain anonymous and not really have it known that they've been helping, you must respect that. Oh, people are asking why. Why would someone want to be anonymous? All right, the real answer is because they're not certain you're going to succeed, right? They're not certain that this group is going to really make it, and they don't want to have taken your side because it could be detrimental to them if anybody knew that they helped. A lot of times employment detrimental or some sort of a leadership position. They are in some way leadership or in some employment or some position that if they think change should occur, but they're in with the ones that are not changing. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so the status quo is okay with them because they're successful in it, but they really perceive that things should change, but they don't want to be known. That's the key to it. They don't want people to know that they were kind of traitors, right? Yeah. That they kind of took the opposite side, that they helped change occur, right? Yeah, bad thing. So, but you cannot out them. You must respect the fact that they wish to be anonymous. Because if you do, and they have repercussions, everybody's going to know and no one will trust you again. So that's very important. Who else do you have to have empathy with? Thank you. Quite a few people, Elizabeth and others, are talking about the opposition. You have to understand their side, even if you don't agree with it. And once you understand their side, and I actually like to approach the opposition. I like to talk to them. I like to get some empathy and understanding as leader, because sometimes they can get empathy and understanding about us if they're willing, right? And sometimes we're not as in disagreement as it seems like we are, right? We might have the same purpose in mind. We just don't agree on what success looks like. Well, that's halfway there. And let's bring everybody into the circle and see if we can't make a compromise. See if we can't reach consensus. See if we can't kind of join forces, because I'm very big on bigger is better, really, because it gets more attention, it gets more traction, right? I'm big on getting the numbers up, right? Yeah. Because sometimes your opposition isn't as opposed as you both think, as you all think. Sometimes more than one. Yeah. Also empathy within the community, because you're going to need some public support, right? And so people have to understand what it is you're doing. The who, what, where, when, and why, right? What you're doing, why you're doing it, and why you think that this is the proper response, right? Yeah. What do we need also to bring our best selves as leaders? How about patience, right? That's our next topic, patience. Oh, my. Yes, we're going to need some patience for this. Because sometimes we've got some participants that, well, okay, they're a little annoying, right? It's not going as smoothly as we kind of predicted it should. And you can't get impatient because they're doing, assuming that they're doing the best they can, right? You can't become impatient and kind of indignant. I've seen that happen where the leader gets kind of indignant. Excuse me, no. We are models of civility, and I think that breaches civility, right? Right. We're going to talk about that a little further down the line. Give me one second. I'm going to take a sip of water. Sorry about that. Thank you. It shows it's a live show. It's kind of like, oh, let's keep taking little breaks here and wandering off and then coming back. Thank you for still being there. So, what do we need for patience, right? Yes. Thank you. Suki and others are saying you need to be able to answer questions, right? There'll be lots of questions. Whenever I start something new, and I bet this is true of you, so you can think about this, I'm kind of a pain at the beginning, especially if it's something to do with, well, technology or some sort of equipment or something, or something that I've really never done before, and I'm trying to learn it. And I need to ask a lot of questions. But once I've gotten a clear answer and I've managed to do whatever it is, I stop asking questions. It's just that it seems like I'm going to be a pain, but really I'm not. It's just that I've got a bunch of questions because I don't want to do it wrong, right? A bunch of questions because I've never done it before. I had that when we started this show. It's kind of a sequence to it, and I didn't want to do it wrong. I didn't exactly understand how. So I called customer service like 12 times asking a bunch of questions. But I haven't called customer service in years because I have my answer, and I know how to do it now. So remember that questions are especially thick, especially lots at the beginning. You have that too. You've got a bunch of questions at the beginning that you need answered, and you get the answer. If it's clear, you do it, and you go, ah, that's how it's done. I see now. I know what I'm doing. You feel more confident, right? And you go on. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. This is good. Yeah. So lots of questions is a good thing. Sometimes you've got someone who nags. You must have some patience, but they might need to not do it with the whole group waiting. Because there's a certain point to which if you've got a question that probably other people do too, and they just don't know they have the question, or they're just not too shy to ask, right? So it's good to have somebody ask. There's a certain point at which somebody's just tying up the place and they're just kind of dopey. So you need to have some patience for them, but that's why you have an assistant, and that's why they field questions on the phone privately, right? And not hold up the whole group. Yeah, so you have to kind of draw a line. It's a leadership decision and it has to do with patience. You have to have patience for questions, especially in the beginning, or when we're the beginning, not necessarily being the beginning of the group, but the beginning of a new phase, maybe even. Because if people have reasonable questions, then other people have the question too, and they want to hear the answer. And you judge whether or not it's already been answered and it's still reasonable to do it, take the time of the group, right? How do you judge? That's a good question. I try to be super patient, but I judge with body language of the other people in the group, I think. I judge whether or not there are follow-up questions from anyone else. I judge whether people are starting to shift in their seat and roll their eyes, which is, of course, uncivil, but hey. And you know what I mean? I judge whether the other people in the group are interested or they've got it. And it's just nagging. It's just somebody likes to ask questions and be up on front. Or they're really off topic. Mm-hmm. And then you say, we're going to answer your question, but afterwards. And if they're really just designed to stymie the group because somebody likes to talk, or They might be deliberately being intrusive. Yeah. Well, let's answer those later and not let the group get held up. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. How else do we get patience and make our best self, which would be a patient self and an empathetic self, right? Mm-hmm. This is a good point, too. Lee and others are saying you also need to keep track of progress to see if maybe there are unasked questions that need to be answered. People don't know that they've got the question. So, yes, somebody has to keep track of the progress of the group, especially if you've made subcommittees or they're not reporting in very often. We don't meet so often, and there's kind of a lag of time when people are supposed to be working on stuff, and you want to be certain that they really are and that they're on the right track is the key to it, right? Right. On the right track, really, really got the idea of what's going on, right? Yes, it does keep everyone in the loop, which is kind of an American expression, but it means that we send progress reports, we send updates, we ask for how it's going and like that, and we disseminate the information to everyone. This is important because it allows everyone to understand that progress is being made and to understand how their contribution is important and what their contribution should look like. It's very informative, right? Mm-hmm. People are asking how to keep everyone in the loop. Nowadays, by email, by text, by not so much by mail itself, unless it's really big, unless you need to disseminate something that's kind of a lot of pages. But even that could be done online nowadays using one of those apps. I think that you should have an assistant because you're busy. Especially as you get more experienced in the field, you'll get lots of clients and you'll be busy. And you'll be juggling different groups at different times with different needs. Yes, you can get an intern. Yes, we have interns. But we don't use them to really track progress because the person that's tracking the progress needs to be able to alert you, the leader, if things are going a little sideways. They have to be able to make that judgment call. They have to make a judgment call to show it to you and say, this is what's happening. I'm not too sure about it. What do you think? So that you can reinsert yourself, maybe even call a meeting, right, to get everybody back on track. So you need someone who can make that kind of a decision, that kind of a judgment call, and really, really keep track, of progress. That's generally someone who it's their profession. They're being paid, right? If you can possibly swing it funding-wise, and really you should be able to, you should well pay an assistant. Somebody who's really efficient and detail-minded, right? An assistant who will keep track of deadlines and things too, right? Yeah. Interns come and go. Now, we love them, and we use them like for seminars and workshops and things and for setup and stuff that doesn't need to be tracked so much. And they get experience because they get to go, right? And they get to see how it's done. But they're only there. We like them to be there for a year because by the time we train them, we don't want them to be leaving. So there's a certain amount of acclimation, certain amount of training involved. And also, they are usually fairly inexperienced, so they have to have some training how to do things, right? Now, we don't take anyone who is less than an MBA level. that's more than college in some sort of a doctoral or a master's program, right? Because we can be fussy. I don't know what kind of groups you're doing, but the more mature, the more credit they can get and like that, the more efficient they will be in my experience, right? Right. That's just my experience. Mm-hmm. So you need to have an intern do stuff that's not tracking and really a professional track. If you can't afford to pay an assistant, geez, see if you can get funding. And if not, you're going to have to keep track of the tracking. You're going to have to keep one eye on it to make sure that it's all very solid, that it's all very good, that it's all very efficient. Because you won't get more clients, you won't get more groups if you can't be efficient with that. Mm-hmm. Yes, subcommittees report to the whole. Oh, this is a good point, too. We're talking about leader patience to be our best self. Yes. Hussein says you have to also be patient with the employer. Patient with the employer. On this show, a lot of you know this, I call whoever it is that brought you in, whoever it is that you kind of report to, even if it's not a actual written report, whoever it is that got you involved, I call that person, entity, whatever, the employer. It does not mean that that's the actual relationship. It's just easy to call them something, and I call them the employer because it means that they are the people that brought you in and are taking an interest in the outcome, right? The employer might not actually be the legal relationship, but we're going to call them the employer. Mm-hmm. And you need to have patience with them. Because they brought you in to get a certain result. And it may take a while. Or they may need to modify their expectations now that we're into it. They may need to put in some extra funding. How about for your assistant? But yes, they need to put in some, they might need to cough up some more funds. And they might need to, I don't know, go to a committee or something to get that. You see, this is all stuff that needs to be done that takes a little while and you need some patience. And some nagging, too. Some, not only patience, but you also need to be persistent, right? To be your best self because you need them to do something to assist your best self. Mm-hmm. How about community outreach, right? And we do need to reach out to our community, reach out to maybe other groups that are doing the same thing, right? Yeah. Reach out to them and find out what it is that they're doing and how we interact with them, how we can pool our resources. And remember, resources might be money, but it's also people. Resources is both money and people, right? Mm-hmm. Remember that they are also like to be leader. So you can't just go over to somebody and say, look, I'm better than you are, which is essentially what people try to do. Make your people come into my group and you become a participant and not the leader anymore. Ah, gee. Well, sometimes it's true. Yeah, that's true. Georgina and others say that sometimes that does work. It depends if the other group leader really doesn't like to be the leader. They kind of got roped into it, but they'd really like somebody to just take it over so they don't have to bother with it. Right? Yeah, they're usually volunteers, and it's more than they bargained for. Yeah, that's kind of an American expression, too. There's probably translates everywhere. But there's an American expression, they bit off more than they can chew. Yeah, they would really like to kind of be relieved from the obligation of doing this, right? And if they can find you, well, go with God. That's wonderful. And they're more than delighted. Then you've got the leaders who really don't want it because they have their own group and they like it. They need to be respected and brought in to the loop as their group, but we're working together, right? And not shunted aside. Even if you think you're better. Yeah, I know. And even if you kind of are. So we're still going to respect that they have needs. They have leadership needs. They need to be their best self, too. Let's all be best selves together. Mm-hmm. Community outreach might also be that you become a participant or volunteer. It's interesting to do. I do it with some frequency if I have time. I like to participate in groups where somebody's a leader that I respect. I'd like to see them do it. I like to participate if I don't have any expertise in an area. I would like to learn. I'd like to learn more about it. I'd like to learn from people that have expertise because I bring legal and efficiency and people skills and like that, but there might be some specialty expertise that would be interesting to have, right? Yeah. And so that would be good. Yes. How about some expertise like that? Mm-hmm. It enhances your reputation in the community to show that you're civic-minded, right? Sometimes you participate because you have lots of expertise, but the group has no money, and they really need help. They need someone to grab the wheel and steer. I've done that. And really get them back on track, back on how to do this, back on how to get the job done, right? And that's wonderful for your reputation in the community. And also, quite frankly, doing good is enhancing to your best self. Yeah, it makes you feel good. I always feel good when I've really accomplished something, really helps a group, really, really helps someone to go forward and do something good in the world. Wasn't that a wonderful thing? Doesn't that feed our best self? I think it does. Yeah. Yes. Our next topic up was invisible participants. We just kind of talked about them, right? The key is to see if you can find out who they are, right? That's the empathy, the 5W questions, who, what, where, when, and why, and then see if they can be invited into the room. I really would like to deal with them directly, even if they remain anonymous, because otherwise would they hear, the invisible participants, who are very influential? What they hear is filtered through what the participant is telling them, which is not necessarily a lie, but when someone tells you something, understand that it involves their opinion about it. It's not wrong, it's not deceptive, but it does involve their opinion. It's kind of within their determination, within their interpretation of what's going on. And maybe that's not true. I mean, it's kind of an interpreted telling. But if you could talk directly to the invisible participant, the anonymous one, right? Well, then they'd get a clearer picture, right? And they'd be able to give you an opinion about what to do. They're kind of experts, right? They'd be able to give you an opinion about what to do, about what they think, that's also not filtered through somebody else's thought process. isn't interpreted by someone else. It comes clean. It comes straight to you. So try inviting them in and really respect being anonymous, because that's why they're invisible, right? Because they don't want to be part of it. But they do. They're interested. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about modeling civility and enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Remember that you cannot ask for compliance with something that you don't do. You cannot ask for compliance with something that you don't do. Yes, it's true. We have. Thank you, everyone, for being here. We've got some new folk, and the civility rules are the only real rules that Recipe for Peace now has. And at their base, they say we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. Everybody's going to have their turn. Nobody's going to roll their eyes, sigh. Well, it used to be pass notes, but now text things to other people in the room, which makes them snort and pass their phone around. No. If you're going to do that, I'm not going to confiscate the phones, which people really hate. So the first time you have that and you confiscate the phones, they'll remember not to do that anymore, because people don't like to let go of their phones. Just take my word for that. And then you always have some fool that can't figure out which phone is theirs. So we actually use index cards, actual pieces of paper index cards, and an ink pen. I know that's so primitive. And we have you put down your name and stick your phone on top of that index card. So we don't have the oops, I accidentally went off with someone else's phone. I didn't actually think this was possible. But I actually know someone who drove off in someone else's car from valet parking because they didn't keep track of the keys very well. And it's, what, a white Lexus or something. And they actually were given the keys by the valet showed up with the car, right, with the keys in the ignition. And they drove off. And it wasn't their car. And they had to come back and see if whoever it was, those car, oh, never mind. Use the index card trick. Then you don't have that problem because, quite frankly, a lot of phones look very similar. At least they do around here, right? Yeah. And then you won't have the, I'm not certain if this is my phone. People grab it on the way out, right? Ugh, it's my phone. Well, grab the one that's on your name on the index card, right? Right. So when you confiscate phones, and you will have to do that at least once, my experience, have everybody pass around an index card, have them stick with name on it, name and index card underneath each phone or device. Because sometimes, well, everybody's got a phone. But whatever it is that needs to be confiscated, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Because usually people are doing it on their phone, but, you know, it could be a tablet or something, too. Remember the index card trick. Yes, some of you have had mix-ups. See, that happens. Because they tend to be, a lot of people have the same style of phone. And like that, and they do it kind of quickly. Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, very important. So, that's civility. You want to not be rude to each other, and if you're going to text and pass around like little notes, we're going to confiscate. Remember that you, for the civility rules, not only are you a model of civility, you never lose your temper or do anything ucky, and if you have one of those days and you accidentally breach the civility rules, I don't do it anymore, but especially when you're kind of new in the profession. Oh, you accidentally breach the civility rules and you, oops. Apologize. And explain that you understand that you breached the civility rules. It just kind of happened. It won't happen again, and you expect no one else to follow your bad example. Right? Yeah. Fess up. Just explain that that was not appropriate behavior. You don't know what came over you. And it won't happen again because it won't, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So you need to model them. If you accidentally don't, apologize. The civility rules, I always announce them. I always announce that they're in play. I announce this with groups that I don't think are going to need to have the announcement because they're fairly in sync with each other. They're in agreement with each other, and they're trying to get something done together, right? I announce the civility rules anyway, just so we all know, we remember, yeah. Some of them, a lot of these groups, they only smile and go, yeah, we know. But and some groups won't. They will never violate the civility rules. They are just trying to get something done, right? And they need some leadership in how to push forward, right? That's why you're there. There are the leaders there. Not to keep them from having fisticuffs, but to keep them from kind of stagnating and just turning into book club. Because sometimes groups do that. They enjoy each other's company and like that, and they're working on it, but they're really just discussing and nothing's coming from it, right? Right. But you need to announce immediately, as soon as you get together. And then if you need to, you need to enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. You cannot wait until the civility rules have been breached and you've kind of let it get away from you because you didn't do it immediately, consistently, and fairly, or you got kind of tired of saying the same thing and let it slide. No, 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 no. Do not let things slide. You won't be able to get them back. It'll be harder. I mean, you can, but it'll be hard to get them back. And why make it hard on yourself? Why make it difficult? You want to be able to say, you know, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So you want to enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly. Mm-hmm. Enthusiasm, you need to look like you're going, like you think we're going to succeed. I mean, really, if the leader doesn't think we're going to succeed, well, how are your participants going to have confidence? So you model enthusiasm, you model going towards success, you model a can-do spirit. Because otherwise, your participants do look to you to find out whether or not they're going to make it, whether or not it's going to be successful, whether or not this is the group to be in. The answer is, oh, yes, it is. This is most definitely the group to be in. And it's an honor to be here, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Remember that that's kind of a biggie, that it's good to be in this group. If the group is chosen, then it might indeed be an honor to be. If the group, to be a participant. If the group is all one level of employment, for example, well, that's chosen too. That's an honor also because, you know, if you don't do well in this group, remember the employer is backing us. We're going to talk about that. And the employer could, well, make you not part of the group anymore by demoting you and not being in that level. Oops. Right, right. Mm-hmm. Now, our next, and yes, it is important. Yes, yes, yes. Denise and George and like that are talking about how to get the employer to back you. And your employer, remember, we're talking about whoever it is that brought you in, whoever's the higher up, so to speak. They might not technically be your employer. But this person, this entity, because sometimes it's a board or something like that, must back you for civility and enthusiasm and for the whole thing. They need to back you. They need to really come forward if you are in need of enforcement, right? Because just saying that is not civil, we will not act like that, without any peace, without any power, well, if somebody's truly being uncivil, they're enjoying it and they're going to ignore you, right? They have to know there are repercussions for that kind of action. Mm-hmm. I get this straightened out with the employer before I take on the group. I do. I get it actually in writing, in contract. What kind of power I have? Can I demote someone? Can I threaten their job? Can I threaten their livelihood? Can I throw them out of the group? What can I do as a repercussion for incivility, for not being an enthusiastic team player, for trying to sabotage the group, for example? Yeah, sometimes you have that. My specialty, if I have one, is that I am often brought in to groups. Okay, I don't like to say the word failed, but they failed. They have not succeeded in coming to a good conclusion. They failed. And they need help. They need a new sheriff in town. And I'm the new sheriff, right? Right. These groups are oftentimes one of the participants is the prior leader. The prior leader, and this is just human nature, oftentimes has an interest in the group failing again as under my leadership because it shows that it couldn't be done is what it really is, right? Yeah. I didn't fail because I was a loser. I failed because it couldn't be done. Even Sue couldn't get this straightened out, right? Even Sue couldn't get this straightened out. Well, hey, if you had failed, would you like someone else to succeed kind of efficiently? It's human nature. But you need some power over this. Yes, it's good to have them not be a participant. This is true. Sometimes that's not immediately at least available. It has to be worked out. But the employer needs to have your back. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that is thinking outside the box for the employer, too. Mm-hmm. Because our next topic is being your best self by thinking outside of the box, which is, of course, an Americanism, but it means kind of differently, kind of not in the same way that was thought before, right? And if this way that was thought before didn't quite make it, we're going to have to think up a different way now, aren't we? Yeah, we're going to have to think up something else to do. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're going to talk about experts in a minute, but sometimes the thing to do is to look at the people who failed before. What did they do? Well, maybe not wrong, but what path did they take that wasn't successful? And maybe we should not follow that same path. We will judge, I'm afraid, that we will have some judgment here, that they were not incompetent in some way. Let's judge that they were indeed intelligent and competent, but the things kind of didn't work, because that happens sometimes. And let's judge how come that is. How come it didn't work? How come it wasn't successful, right? Yeah. And so we want to look at why something failed, and maybe, because we're going to head for experts, right? The people in charge, or the people in that group, they can be our experts on what path to take now that wasn't exactly the path that they took, right? Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Because they're oftentimes the best experts because they have a real valid opinion and they still have an interest in having the success and having the change occur. It's just that they couldn't get it done. And the question is why, right? Let's connect with them. Let's find these people. Mm-hmm. Best self-thinking outside the box. I think this is a valid point. Yes, Padme and others are talking about looking to what is moral and good for all. Because that does go to your best self. Not some sort of a shortcut that we can get away with. No, folks. Do not do things because you can get away with them. Let's do things because they are good, because they are moral, because they're a great idea, right? Because, well, at least they seem like a great idea, and we're going to push forward. And if we find that it's not, well, let's be flexible, right? That's thinking outside the box also. If circumstances change, well, you need some flexibility. You need to be able to say, well, this is not working. Let's go forward in a different way. Mm-hmm. And also, when you're thinking outside the box, you might have new needs. Yes, the new needs sometimes are funding. This is true. Hey, that's how come the employer has your back, right? Because that's usually where the funding comes from. And if it is not, and if the group is kind of self-funded, well, let's figure out a way to raise some more funds, right? Yeah, let's have a fundraiser. Let's figure out what to do. Mm-hmm. The next topic is reaching out to experts as our best self. We're going to reach out, right? And that may be one of the ways that we can get funding and flexibility and change our circumstances when our circumstances change, right? Mm-hmm. The experts, I like people who have been in the trenches. I like people who have really done it as my expert. And I am kind of not that impressed by credentials necessarily. I know I have a lot of credentials. This is true. Yeah, I have 2 doctorates in law and like that. But that doesn't make me a good leader. My experience and my flexibility makes me a good leader and my expertise, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I like people who have either succeeded, and we'll ask them how they did it and ask their assistants. And I would like people who didn't succeed and ask them how come not and seek their assistance and their opinions, right? Because it's expert opinion is what you're seeking. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true. Thomas says that the key is to know when you need the expert. The key is to know when you need the expert. This is a true statement. It is complicated to know that because you need to say, well, this is what we need. And do we have this expertise in-house? Are the participants, are you as leader, as the employer, who knows this? See, we search in-house first, and then we reach out to someone who knows, who's someone who has an opinion. I actually like to reach out to multiple experts and ask their opinions and ask why and kind of tell them everybody's opinion and ask how, what do they think of that? And like, you know, I like to know, I guess I have empathy. I like to know the who, what, where, when, and why of the expert opinion and not just take it on face value. I guess I don't take anything on face value if it's truly going to impact our success. And besides, we don't want to have an unforeseen circumstance, right? We don't want something to happen that is kind of, oh, we didn't intend that, an unintended consequence. Mm-hmm. This is true. The media does like to see credentials. So you might not be, we're going to talk about media next, best self to the media, to present your best self. As leader, best self is the group too, right? Mm-hmm. You definitely need a spokesperson, because everybody can't talk to the media because they don't know how to do it, and it's going to get misquoted, especially in this day when there's just tons of different kinds of media. You don't want to get misquoted, right? You don't want things to be taken out of context. Bad idea. So you want to elect a spokesperson, assign a spokesperson to talk to the media. Is this spokesperson us, the leader? Maybe. But it might be somebody with fancy credentials that the media is going to really like and get signed, what do they call them, sound bites, right? Get it all prepped for them so they don't have to think and they can just put it out. You put out a media sheet so that they can pick it up and just do it, because quite frankly, they're busy too. And if you were a media person and somebody handed you a pre-written thing that you could just put out and not have to spend any time on and get credit for, well, wouldn't you? You're busy, right? You got better things to do. It's simple. It's easy. Go with the one that's the most prepared. That would be us, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Because the media creates public opinion. Yeah. The media creates public opinion, and you want public opinion on your side. It's as simple as that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Which means that we're going to have a no texting, no blogging, no reporting on our process while we're doing it, our process in progress, right? Because it's going to be taken out of context, and that's what we have a media spokesperson for, so that they can speak to the media and say what's going on. And we can, well, I suppose that's true. We can spin it in a favorable manner. Hey, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of marketing. It's smart, because public opinion is formed by the media. My friends, I'm about to close down the show because we have run out of time. We will do the recipes next week, I hope. I know sometimes we don't make it, but we had a lovely conversation. And I'm going to do something that you should do. You should thank your participants. Thank your experts. Compliment when they have been efficient, when they've done something good. Don't just assume that, of course, that's what they're supposed to do. No. Acknowledge it. Acknowledge hard work. Acknowledge efficiency. Say thank you. I say thank you all the time. I'm about to say thank you to all of you because you've made my show. Right? If without you, there's nobody to talk to. Mm-hmm. There's no ideas. So thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to find us, remember you could ask questions, right? If you would like to find us, would recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.